This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Let's hit it. Give me a vacation.
Vacation.
Give me a wave.
Surfing.
Give me a city tour.
The trolley.
Give me animals.
The zoo.
Give me some sea life. Give me museums.
Balboa Park.
Give me a woo.
Roller coaster.
What's that spell?
San Diego.
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your family vacation at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casuals and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
Hello and welcome to Savor, a production of iHeartRadio. I'm Annie Reese.
And I'm Lauren Vogelbaum. And today we have an episode for you about sherry.
Yes. As always with these, drink responsibly.
Yes.
Yes, this is definitely, at least for me, Lauren, going to be fun times with pronunciation.
Oh, yeah.
Especially because some of the pronunciations are like, not ancient, but older pronunciations. And I'm going to try my best.
Yeah, yeah. Well, as we're gonna get into, sherry is a type of wine that has existed for a long time. In a region that has a lot of like intersecting languages and dialects of languages going on. And yep. Over like a millennia. So as language changes, we get more and more confused. Thanks, yes. Language.
Yes. And if that slightly panicked note in Lauren's voice didn't tell you, this one was a bit more complicated than we were anticipating.
Uh-huh.
But it's very fun and it's very fascinating, but certainly it was one where, as we were talking about before this, we had to kind of just stop at a certain point because a lot of people have a lot of thoughts and opinions, have written a lot about sherry.
Lots of research. So cool. Yep. So cool.
It is.
And right. And also I had to stop. Yeah. I picked this one because, you know, we'd just done that episode on turtle soup. Mm-hmm. And that involves sherry very frequently. And I was like, that's a thing I don't know that much about. And I did not know how much I didn't know about it because there's a lot more about it than I knew.
Yes.
So yes. Delightful, though.
It is. It is. And I think it was the one I was teasing at in our Garum episode where I said I was doing.
That makes sense.
I think for some reason I kept stumbling across articles about sherry that mentioned garum, and I was just like, the Savor universe. I'll say for myself, I mostly know sherry as a cooking wine. Please don't yell at me. I can feel the ire of some people.
Yeah.
It was my aunt's favorite drink. She drank sherry. And an ingredient in eggnog. I think I've gotten more familiar with it in recent years, but it's still kind of something that I use mostly for cooking or the occasional cocktail.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of familiarity with it. I, like a couple years before the pandemic, one of the posh little bars near our old offices in Atlanta had like, was starting to get into sherries of different kinds. Like they had done like a year or so of being into vermouth and then they started in on sherries. And so I have a little bit of experience from that, but now I'm like, oh heck, I need to go do a lot more delicious research.
Agreed. Agreed. And I'll have a note about that at the end. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
yes. But before we get to that, you can see any of our wine episodes for more information. Also, our wine plague, the Great French Wine Plague, I think we called it.
Yeah.
Wine blight, maybe. That one plays into this as well, as it does with almost every wine episode.
Oh, absolutely.
All wine episodes, probably. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so see that for more information. But I believe that brings us to our question.
It does.
Sherry, what is it?
Well, sherry is a category of wines made with white grapes, fortified with distilled spirits, and then aged in varyingly complex processes for years or even decades. Sherries can range from very dry to very sweet, and can pick up all kinds of different flavors during that aging process, like woody, creamy notes from the oak barrels, funk and brightness from the specialized yeast, a richness and spice from oxidation. So within this one category, you have a heckin' range of wines, from puckery, delicate whites to, like, near syrupy dessert varieties, with these flavors from, yeah, like, floral to fruity to spice to nutty to funky to rich. They are complex and traditional and still being explored. They're like port wines with even more range. they're like looking at a historically black and white photo, and then looking at a version that has been, like, as accurate as possible color edited, and just realizing how vibrant the past really was.
Yeah. Yeah. It's one of those things, I think, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more, but for a lot of people, we have this, I will say me specifically, but I think a lot of people have this kind of, like, sherry is this one thing, but it's not. It is all of these things. And I do love, like, the, you know, port wine with even more range. Like, it's somebody who comes onto the stage and just commands it with all of the things that they're doing. Like, oh, well, I wasn't expecting this.
Yeah, it's a variety show in a single product category. Okay, so due to protective European laws, most wines that are called sherry are made from grapes from mostly the Andalusia region of, like, southwest Spain, and are matured in what's called the Sherry Triangle there, which is this tiny cluster of three towns and cities, like 15 miles apart at most. You've got Jerez de la Frontera, Sanlúcar de Barrameda, and El Puerto de Santa Maria. Yeah, so similar to Champagne, similar products that are made elsewhere or without following the sort of strict rules cannot be labeled sherry, or Jerez or Xerez, which are labels that are used in Europe. Though there are a few other registrations of sherry varieties around, like, South Central Europe, and several countries around the world do produce sherry-like wines. However, today, for simplicity in the rest of this kind of intro section, which is very long, I'm going to be sticking with the traditional Spanish varieties.
Mm-hmm.
Great. Because, okay, there are a dizzying array of sherries, perhaps especially if you are unfamiliar with the category. The three basic subcategories of sherry are dry sherries, naturally sweet sherries, and mixes of the two, which are sometimes called sweet or liqueur sherries. All three of these start the way that pretty much any wine starts. You press grapes to produce juice called must, and then use friendly yeasts to ferment it. The yeasts eat some of the sugars and poop alcohol and flavor.
Yeast poop.
Yeah. Then, in the case of these sherries, you add alcohol that has been distilled from wine, sometimes a brandy, sometimes a neutral spirit alcohol, to bring the alcohol content of this wine, of this young wine, up to whatever you want it to be for the next step. And at this point, things can get pretty weird. For some dry sherries, you engage in this process that's called biological aging. And the biology here is the action of a new addition of yeast. Okay, so you pour your wine from the fermentation vessel, these days a stainless steel cask, into an oak barrel. But you only fill each oak barrel about 80% full. you rest the barrel on its side and add or allow to develop a specialized strain of Saccharomyces cerevisiae that is co-evolved with winemakers to, A, survive in higher than usual alcohol contents, and B, to form up in a really uncharacteristic, like, thick, rubbery, floating raft that covers the surface of the wine inside the barrel. The scientific term for this kind of raft is biofilm, which I know sounds like a prop in a Cronenberg movie, but it's just a thing that some microbes do in order to grow like a more efficient colony. Like the mildew in your shower is a biofilm. It can't grow into the surface of the tile or plastic because it's too hard. It's unfriendly. So instead, the mildew forms a film on top of the tile or plastic. Other microbes do this really frequently in like bodies of fresh water. If you're a hiker, you might have seen something like that. But ostensibly a food show, so okay. In sherry, this biofilm is called the flor, meaning flower or bloom. Yeast bloom makes sense. Yeah. And it can be like 1 to 3 centimeters thick. That's like up to an inch.
Whoa.
I know. Oh, it's so cool. Okay, and what the flor does is that it limits the amount of contact that the wine has with air and oxygen in air, thus preventing oxidation during aging. And thus, the changes that the wine goes through as it ages produce different flavors and scents than other wines might.
Very cool.
So cool!
Yeah.
Oh, I love it. Okay. So for some dry sherries, you do this, you let this work for like a year, and then you enter into the next kind of weird step of sherry making, the tiered aging system called the criaderas y solera system. We're gonna get into it. Okay. So in this system, you've got a stack of aging barrels, like several rows high. The bottom row is called the solera, which translates literally to like sill, as in like windowsill or doorsill, like a threshold. Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And then each successive row above is a criadera, like first criadera, second criadera, and so on. And that translates to like hatchery or nursery.
Ooh.
So it works like this. The solera on the bottom contains the wine that's been there the longest. And every year, you draw aged wine from it to bottle and sell. When you do that, you fill that barrel back up with wine from the criadera above it. And then you fill it back up with wine from the criadera above that. And once you've done this through all the layers, the top layer of barrels is where you add the new wine that you've just made. So, sherries do not have a vintage. They're all blends.
Again, that's pretty cool.
Right?
Very, very neat to think about this system. And also, I love all their terminology. It feels very like hatchery, nursery, biofilm.
Yeah. Okay. So, the driest sherry type called pheno carries on with the flor, that biological aging, throughout production. And it winds up very pale, crisp, like mineral to floral. There's a specific variety of pheno called Manzanilla that is from this one seaside subregion. It's known to be a little bit briny, okay? Mm-hmm. But to create another type of dry sherry called Amontillado, finished pheno is taken and then aged more, but without the flor this time, thus subjecting the wine to oxidative aging as well. So it winds up amber-colored and very complex, like nutty and herbal and rich. And there's another type called Oloroso, which is aged without the flor at all. Only oxidative aging is used. And it winds up like mahogany in color, nutty and with like spice and woodsy notes. Oloroso is also fermented from the second pressing of grapes, so you're working with like a slightly different base material to begin with. Finally, in the dry sherry category, you've got Palo Cortado, which is made like an Oloroso, but with first pressing grape must instead of second pressing. And this can either be done on purpose because you want to do it, or when for some reason the floor colony in a pheno barrel fails. And so you then go like, well, I don't want to dump it out. So you switch that barrel into an oxidative aging system instead.
Makes sense.
It does. I love it. All these dry types are made with a variety of grape called a palomino. Okay. All right. And then. There are those naturally sweet sherries. Our second category of sherries, which are made with grapes that are harvested late in the season and or sun-dried before the fermentation process in order to preserve some of their sugars, like develop extra sugars on the vine, preserve those sugars, and develop flavors. Fermentation is stopped before all the sugars are turned into alcohol, and then the wines are fortified and aged without the floor, without the biofilm. These will be deep in color and sweet with fruit and spice flavors. Varieties of this there's three main ones, Dulce, Moscatel, and Pedro Ximenez, or PX. Those last two are named for the type of grape that they use, which are not Palomino. Okay, cool, cool. And then you can blend dry and naturally sweet types together to create the core or sweet sherries. And these have characteristics of both, of the above. They're like mid-sweet. The varieties that are called cream sherries, which are perhaps the most common in the English-speaking world, are liqueur sherries.
Yes. That's what I use in the eggnog.
That is what is generally called for, especially given that cream sherries have been quite popular in England and came over to us that way.
Yes.
Okay. This is a lot of different types of wine. And so, as you might imagine, they are served in different ways. The lighter ones are meant to be served chilled, the sweeter ones, room temperature. Both are usually just served straight, often enjoyed with food, like snacks at a minimum. They can also be mixed into cocktails, as you said at the top. They apparently go really well with vermouth and thus are popular as like a substitute for gin or vodka or whiskey in classic cocktails like the Martini or the Manhattan.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, right? Oh, I want to try it so much.
Me too. I also want a shirt that says biological aging.
Yeah.
We can make it happen. Well, what about the nutrition?
Drink responsibly. Note that while some types of sherry are of like fairly normal wine alcohol content, like 15% alcohol content, others are a little bit stronger, like up to like 22%. So watch out for that. However, on like the flip side of that coin, note that this is about like half the alcohol content of most liquors. So if you're mixing it into cocktails, it'll be like lighter on booze, which can be great.
Yes, absolutely. We do have some numbers for you.
Okay, we do. So there is an International Sherry Week that happens the second week of November. 2023 will be its 10th anniversary. It was created by this Australian expat living in Spain. And it is a collection of international education and celebration online and in person. As of 2022, it featured hundreds of participating establishments in 24 countries, including 410 sherry tastings, 109 featured cocktails, and all kinds of events. The one that stood out to me was Sherry Week Bingo in San Francisco.
Yes. Want to do it.
They have reported increases of up to 500% in sherry sales during that week.
I bet they have.
Yes. Right before the pandemic, Jerez, which is the largest city in the Sherry Triangle, they were hosting some 500,000 tourists a year, at least partially due to sherry.
Wow.
They have their own sherry festival on the first Saturday of September. It's part of like a larger three-week festival that happens there. It originated as like a harvest celebration. Every year, there is a queen of the vintage, and a parade to bring her like through the town and to one of the bodegas, one of the wine cellars, with like a parade that sounds very carnival, Mardi Gras kind of stuff. Mm. Yeah, mm-hmm. Love it.
Mm-hmm. I hope she has a scepter or a crown.
I didn't see one, but I didn't look up that many pictures. So well,
listeners, let
so
us
this
know.
Is my bad. Yeah.
No. There better be a scepter or something involved. Or else, what is it even for?
Right?
Sherry?
Never. What?
Oh. One source I found claimed that the UK, the Netherlands, and Germany import the most sherry.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Intro to these numbers for you. So Drinks International magazine does these yearly reports on different types of alcohol, where they interview 100 award-winning bars from 33 countries around the world. And they found that as of early 2023, 84% of those bars were carrying one sherry, 72% had two types, and 66% had three types. And that's where they stopped. They didn't check if there were
beyond.
More. Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it sounds like most places have some sherry options, at uh-huh. least one.
Yeah. Yeah. Most like kind of like top tier, like game changer, like trend setting bars. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and sherry has been trendy in one way or another throughout history.
It has. It's had its ups and downs, but we will get mm-hmm. into those as soon as we get back from a quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com. Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. Mm-hmm. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip together.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And yes, as we said, Sierra passed wine episodes.
Mm-hmm.
Also, as I think we've said in literally every of those episodes, this is not the grape episode,
no.
Of which there will be multiple grape episodes.
Someday.
Not it's
today.
Not that.
No.
No, definitely not. We've got enough to talk about already.
We do.
All right. So, according to some sources, the first known mention of sherry wine dates back to the first century CE when a Greek geographer claimed in one of his books that the first wines vines, not wines, were brought to the Jerez. I also saw Jerez, but I think this goes back to the pronunciation changing over time. Mm-hmm.
Yep, yep.
The Jerez region by the Phoenicians in 1100 BCE.
Wow.
And yeah, archaeological evidence recovered in that area, including wine presses, suggest that people from what is now Lebanon brought their winemaking traditions and taste with them when they set up towns in this area.
Yeah, and I didn't look into when and how the pronunciation and spelling of Jerez, Z-E-R-E-S, morphed to Jerez. There are just like a lot of intersections of dialects and languages going on here. And this is not the point in time that I've done this etymology. Maybe I will in the future.
Ooh, that would be fun.
Yeah. But
certainly confusing for us at this current moment. yes. Okay. So the wine they made in this area was exported and sold all throughout the Mediterranean, perhaps especially to Rome. And I think this is one of the reasons Garum showed up alongside.
Oh, okay. Okay. Sure.
Sherry. When Roman rule was established in this area in around about 138 BCE, that meant that trade opened up, including trade in sherry. And because of that, it garnered a reputation of a wine that was well-liked and a wine that traveled well. In the first century CE, a writer described the proper process for making wine in Jerez from soil and grape types, best vineyard locations, best planting times, best harvesting times, and best times for all of these other tasks, quality of must. They were already looking into this at this time.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then when Muslim peoples, largely from North Africa, arrived in this area and established power in 711 CE-ish, Jerez wine production continued on despite some rules around alcohol consumption. But people are mostly able to get around that by claiming that this wine could be used medicinally and things like perfumes, that it was used in the production of raisins, which I want to come back to and visit. And of course, people, and particularly the well-off, still got away with drinking it. A map from 1150 CE denotes what appears to be a town in the region called Jerez.
Yep.
King Alfonso X of Castile took power in Jerez in the 1200s, and the wine industry there changed again. And there was this a lot of fighting and violence around this shift in power. And in order to combat that and grow economically, the ruling class handed out parcels of land based on class and sometimes based on merit. And vines, along with cereal, became these crops that were required to be grown on these lands.
Ah.
And yes, this meant that they became very vital to the local economy.
And it's right around here-ish in the timeline where distilled liquor was developed, like technologically developed. So I'm not totally sure when it would have started being added to these wines, but it started to exist around now. So there you go.
There you go. Yes. And even before all of this, these wines were being exported to England, where they were known after this town name, Jerez. In the 12th century, King Henry I of England proposed this exchange of goods, English wool for sherry. Sherry became so important a crop to Jerez that a 1402 royal decree forbade anyone from not only uprooting these vines, any of these vines, but also from placing any beehives in the area because they were afraid the bees would damage the vines.
No.
Which I don't know if it's true at all.
I don't believe that's accurate, but I could be wrong.
I could be wrong as well, but yeah, they weren't taking any risks.
No, I see that.
Yes. By 1483, growing demand, particularly from England, France, and Belgium as well, prompted the town council in Jerez to put into place the regulations of the Guild of Raisin and Grape Harvesters of Jerez. Quite a name. These regulations laid out all of the rules of how to make a sherry and the requirements of the final product. So they were really trying to maintain a certain level of product that was in high demand from these places. Something else that really boosted the demand was praise from some monarchs. That people were like, oh, the royalty is drinking it. I must try it. And so the market for sherry grew even more, including in what is now America. With exportation and colonization, that growth only continued, partly helped along by stipulations requiring that up to a third of cargo space on ships trading with the Americas go to goods from the Cadiz region, of which this kind of whole sherry area was, which I actually want to, that might be like a headache that I don't actually want, but I did want to look into more of this kind of like shipping rules around it has to have a third of this. But later date, maybe.
Yeah, that's okay.
Yes. This increase in demand transformed some small businesses making sherry into huge, huge industries. And some wine investors even flocked into the area to get in on it. And I think this is one of the areas where I had to stop myself because it was a lot of, I think if I knew more about sherry brands, I would have been like, oh. But a lot of those kind of bigger name brands, this is when they were kind of like setting up camp, setting up shop. Ships transporting sherry did have a pirate problem, but this interestingly only boosted demand in markets like England for a couple of reasons. It's really interesting. Once again, various monarchs brought sherry into fashion, and Shakespeare allegedly drank a few bottles a day alongside a friend. And several of his plays do mention sherry in a very positive light. So,
Okay. Yes.
And even still, the industry continued to grow, as did the number of foreign investors. By some accounts, sherry's made up 20% of the value of exports out of Spain by the 1840s. However, this is also around the time that taste in Europe started to change, moving away from pale, lighter wines to darker, stronger ones, particularly in Britain, which again was this huge market for sherry. So this caused some turmoil in the industry and a push and pull between finding a new market or evolving with the taste of the current market. Because the established rules that we mentioned around how to make a sherry, they became an issue in terms of any adapting or experimenting that people might have wanted to try to kind of meet the demands of this, the new tastes of the existing market. And this came to a head in 1775 with a lawsuit, kind of drawn out lawsuit that eventually led to the dissolution of the Vintners Guild and the doing away with all the strict rules that they enforced.
Yes.
But while all of this was happening, producers were honing in on what is now one of the most important characteristics of modern sherry, and that's the aging method, which I did not put the name in, the Spanish name, because I thought I'd butcher it, but Laura mentioned it at the top. Yes. And also when experimentation with different grapes started happening on a larger scale, like people had been doing these things, but this is when they were like, oh, okay, let's really try some stuff. And then I feel like this whole episode is just and then. Oh, my goodness. In the late 19th, early 20th century, Phylloxera, which was this tiny insect that we talked about in our great French wine blight episode. You could find it. You know what I'm talking about. Absolutely devastated European vines and rootstocks, and it decimated these vineyards. Jerez vineyards making sherry were able to bounce back fairly quickly and even were prosperous in the early decades of the 20th century. However, another problem arose around the question of what exactly is a sherry? It's very, you know.
fair. I encountered that problem myself.
Yes, as did I. Especially because sherry was so popular amongst the British, everywhere that they had colonies, there was sherry. And this led to some imitation. So a lot of like insert area here, sherry. So to combat this, some producers sought out a denomination of origin, or a DOP, which we have talked about several times on the show. but essentially is a set of rules and stipulations that determine what makes a product a product, like what steps and processes and qualities have to be achieved legally before a product like Sherry can carry the name Sherry.
Yeah.
Right. The first Spanish wine law published in 1933 mentioned wines from Jerez. So they knew in this area, like, this was a big deal. This wine has made us a lot of money. We need to do something about this.
Mm-hmm.
Also, Sherry has appeared in numerous pieces of literature and visual arts. Like, just in a bunch of art, Sherry is mentioned. It is there. So I think that was a part of their real desire to kind of to hone in on what Sherry is.
Yeah.
Because it did have this reputation and it was everywhere, but now it had been so murky about what that actually meant when you said it.
Yeah.
Yes.
And as popular as it was, somewhere along the line, Sherry kind of fell out of fashion in a lot of circles. Like by the 1990s or thereabouts, in the United States at least, it became considered like an old lady drink.
Yeah.
And in the next couple decades, like between 2002 and 2015, global exports just about cut in half.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, certainly that was the impression that I had.
Yeah, that it was this, like, sweet old lady drink. Like, yep. And that's what it was. Mm-hmm.
Yes. That is starting to turn around, though, because Sherry is experiencing a surge in popularity. In fact, right before the pandemic, I went to this class on Sherry at Atlanta Food and Wine, big event here in Atlanta, and sommeliers there at this event were talking about, like, how much it's growing and all these categories that are growing within it. And they said that it's especially younger folks who are expressing this interest in Sherry, which is different from previous customers and these reputations that a lot of us had associated with Sherry.
Oh, yeah, yeah. It's seen a lot of growth during the pandemic, too. Between August of 2020 and August of 2021, sales were up over 20% globally, and they were even higher than that. That's, you know, an average, so clearly they were higher in certain markets. Like in Australia, sales were up 41%.
Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And to end on a down note, as with many products, climate change is a concern to Sherry production, not only in how it may affect the growth of the grapes that are used to make these wines, but also in the flor. Like, it might affect the way that biofilm grows during that aging process. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I hope for a good future for Sherry.
There is research in place figuring out how to, you know, economically, environmentally, sustainably create or perhaps recreate as these microclimates are lost, like help preserve them with technology. Mm. So, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the works.
That's good to hear. Well, maybe we'll revisit this with happier news in the future.
Yeah.
Which
yeah.
would be cool.
Oh, gosh.
Mm-hmm. And this is certainly one where I would love for listeners
to write in. Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. Because we just covered a lot of territory, and I feel like there's a lot of territory that we did not cover. So if there's like a story or a type or, yeah, like if you have any Sherry-specific memories, oh my goodness, I want to hear them. Okay, one final note, actually. I have to admit, I started Googling like which liquor stores around town carry Sherry.
Yeah.
A little bit while we were talking here. And I wanted to mention, I did not mention during my like exploration of all the different types of Sherry. If you see on a label the words dry or pale dry or medium, those are all words that indicate that it's one of those blended liqueur Sherry's.
Okay.
If you're just going through, seeing the label dry on a Sherry does not mean that it's a dry Sherry. It means that it's It means that it's a dry version of a liqueur Sherry, which can be very dry. But
Oh, yay. This is why I have to have like a whole little note thing in my phone when I'm shopping for wines at the store. And, like, I don't know what this means.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean what I think it means.
if you're able to, like if you're just going out in the wild and looking for what a shop has, I always recommend if you're like me and you have this like kind of base knowledge, but nothing more, nothing deeper than that, just Google it and come up with a review for the stuff, and that'll probably tell you what you need to know.
Yes.
I'm not embarrassed about it. I'm just like, no. Yeah, I'm going to stand here for 7 minutes and read
no
a bunch about these different wines. Yeah, what's up?
Mm-hmm. You know, so always, if you're not avoiding people like Lauren and I sometimes do, you can ask a person who
Oh, geez, that's ridiculous.
But you can also, I do it too. I just usually Google, like, okay.
Yeah. Okay.
This is probably
all right.
What I want.
Here we go.
Yes. Yes. But also, if you have recommendations, listeners.
Oh, my goodness. Please.
Yes. That would be great.
Yeah.
But I think that's what we have to say about sherry for now.
It is. It is.
Yes.
We do have some listener mail that people have previously sent in, though, and we are going to get into that as soon as we get back from one more quick break for a word from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Today's episode is brought to you by Discover Puerto Rico.
We've talked in a bunch of different episodes about facets of Puerto Rican cuisine, like the dish mofongo, made of savory, deep-fried mashed plantains studded with some kind of tasty protein, and the creation of the cool, creamy piña colada. But there is so much more there. I've actually never been. You have a tiny bit of experience, don't you?
Yes. Unfortunately, it was a very tiny bit of experience. I was there for about a day. I'm kicking myself for that now. I remember having delicious rums, delicious drinks, but I want to go back because, yeah, so many episodes we do on here, when we're talking about food from Puerto Rico, I want that.
Mm-hmm.
And it sounds amazing. We're trying to get a savor team trip
together. Oh, absolutely. Well, I mean, we're trying to get a trip to a lot of places, but this is really top of the list. Even putting together this ad read made me hungry. I was like, oh, I want to try those things. Yeah, as we've talked about before, there are influences there from African and Spanish and native Taino foodways. The culinary scene sounds amazing, and we want to go, and I'm hungry. No passport is required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. You can learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this. I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black. Directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R. Under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. Thank you, sponsor.
Yes, thank you.
And we're back with Listener
Mail.
It's a lot going on, but it feels kind of gentle to me.
Yeah.
A gentle sherry.
Nice.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited about this. I get to tell a joke.
Ooh, okay. All right.
Yes. All right. Chad wrote, the coleslaw episode reminded me of a joke I saw recently. You're familiar with Murphy's Law? It means that anything that can go wrong will go wrong. But have you heard of Cole's Law? It's thinly sliced cabbage.
Hey.
Oh. I actually have heard this joke before, but I still appreciated getting it.
Oh, every time.
Oh, absolutely. Just brightens my day. Oh, my gosh. I did try to work that into our pun title options, but it was too complicated.
Oh, yeah. That's a lot for a title.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I see you. It's okay. It's all right.
Thank you.
We still worked a pun in there, so it's just fine.
You did. As long as that is that what's happened, then that I'm good with that. But yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Catherine, we think, wrote in. They didn't leave a signature in the email, but that was the name in the header. Email header. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, yes. They wrote, Salvadoran curtido is wonderful and incredibly easy to make. For folks who would like to enjoy cold coleslaw but aren't fans of mayonnaise, it is perfect with any number of things. The combination of vinegar and Mexican oregano is wonderful. Of course, the best thing to have curtido with are pupusas, little stuffed corn or rice tortillas, usually filled with beans, cheese, pork, loroco, a unique green, or a mix. Pupusas would be a great standalone episode. Where I live in Silver Spring, Maryland, there are probably at least 10 Salvadoran food trucks and 10 Ethiopian places, so I am never wanting for pupusas, curtido, or injera. The small business owners from these two countries who arrived here as asylum seekers from brutal civil wars a few decades ago have done so much to enrich the community in this area, just like previous generations of Jewish immigrants from Europe and Black people fleeing the Jim Crow South did. As an immigration attorney, I love seeing the strength of our new communities on each street corner, in food businesses, which create so much connection and warmth and deliciousness. That's so cool.
Yes.
That is extremely rad and important work that you're doing. That's amazing. B, oofta. I want to eat all of that you just talked about right now.
Yes. Very jealous of your food options. All the things that you mentioned I want. And also, yes, pupusas, I think, that's on our list. That's a big one that we want to do.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Goodness. And yeah. See, right. Yeah. As we say kind of all the time on here, like, Atlanta is a really a multicultural community, and we are so lucky to have so many different kinds of food from all of these wonderful different people.
Yes.
It's so good. So good.
It is. And I have all the cravings, all the cravings all the time. But yes. Okay. Cravings or not. Thanks to both of these listeners for writing in. If you would like to write to us, you can. Our email is hello@savorpod.com.
We are also on social media. You can find us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram @SavorPod, and we do hope to hear from you. Savor is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, you can visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Thanks, as always, to our super producers, Dylan Fagan and Andrew Howard. Thanks to you for listening, and we hope that lots more good things are coming your way. This episode is brought to you by Pronamel.
Not all our favorite foods and drinks are BFFs with our teeth. Salad dressings, seltzers, and fruits can be enamel enemies. So if you eat or drink those things regularly, your enamel could be at risk. And once it's gone, it's gone.
Pronamel Intensive Enamel Repair penetrates deep into the enamel surface, locking in vital minerals to repair acid-weakened enamel. And with new Pronamel Repair mouthwash, you can enhance that repair beyond just brushing.
Pronamel is the number one dentist-recommended brand for acid erosion, so buy Pronamel Repair anywhere you buy toothpaste or mouthwash. Visit pronamel.com.
Life in our modern age comes at you pretty fast, which makes our time away especially valuable. When I take time to relax, I like to get far from my everyday life, immerse myself in natural beauty, and have unique experiences. But you don't have to leave the U.S. to experience tropical rainforests and islands filled with adventure, warm culture, and national treasures. Visit Puerto Rico, an island with a vibrant spirit that will sweep you away. Because when you visit, you don't become part of the island, it becomes part of you. In Puerto Rico, you can forget where you came from and embrace where you are. Puerto Rico, where visits end, but stories last forever. No passport required for U.S. citizens and permanent residents. Learn more and plan your trip at discoverpuertorico.com.
Right here, right now. Find your beautiful new floor at Right Rug Flooring. Choose from thousands of in-stock styles, ready for next day installation, and all backed by the right price guarantee. Visit rightrug.com. That's RITERUG.com today to schedule a free in-home estimate or to find a location near you. 24-month financing is available with approved credit. For 90 years, we've been right here, right now. Right Rug Flooring.